My name is Denis Roncourt. I'm a professor of physics at the University of Ottawa.
Now, over the last few years, obviously since 2005, you've had a public battle with the University of Ottawa. Now, can you describe how this all started?
You're right to say it's a public battle. I mean, I've made it public. I've made sure that the public and the people are aware of what's going on, and I've not been, you know, when there are these kinds of conflicts and battles, the institutions often would love it to be secret, would love it to be, you know, behind closed doors only, let's settle this. And that way they have more leverage on you as an individual worker, and they're able to control and manipulate you more. But so it was important for me to make all of this public from the very start. That's been part of it. Now, what happened in 2005 was that it was the first year that I really applied a technique that I called academic squatting, which just means, you know, it's just a fancy name as part of making it public. It was just to get people's attention and make sure that people were following it and being curious about it and wanting to look into it. And what it meant really was that I was going to use novel pedagogical methods, that we were going to look at and motivate the material in new ways, that the students were going to largely, be in charge, decide, you know, what the curriculum was going to be, how they were going to report their progress, all of these things. And we were going to invite outside speakers, activists, movers, to explain what they do, what their battles are about, in order to motivate why we're learning. In this case, it was a course called Physics and the Environment. So it was already an interdisciplinary course that was meant to, take a broad look at physics, in other words, science, the environment, in the broad societal context. So it wasn't much of a stretch to just make it a little broader and introduce these novelties.
And what was the reaction of the administration at the university?
Yeah, well, it's an old story, and it's one that I've told many times. But I mean, basically, in a nutshell, the upper administration freaked out. I mean, as part of making it transparent and public, I had put together a website in which I described this novel course, and I invited members from the community to come in freely and so on. And when the vice president academic of the time saw the website, it perturbed him to the point where he spent the day trying to reach the dean so that the dean could talk to me, confirm that I was the author of that website. And basically on the same day that he was able to talk to me for just a few minutes just to make that confirmation, he barged into the classroom and closed the course down. He basically announced to all the students in the auditorium that, you know, this was not going to happen. It was canceled. It's over. And next week there'll be someone else if need be, and it will be given according to what he called the Senate-approved course description. As you can imagine, all the activists on campus were in that room, basically, because I'd invited everyone and I'd announced it as a novel interdisciplinary course where it was going to be about action, not just theory and so on. So they were all there, and they listened to him. They asked a few questions. He walked out on them. And then it started. It was a bit of an explosion. The media got involved right away. And at the third class, the dean was back basically saying, well, okay, we've come to an agreement. You'll be able to do exactly what you'd planned. So we had the course due to public and student pressure.
And what was it that led up to the suspension from the university?
Well, a lot of things. I mean, it's a long story, right? That was the first course. Following that first course, the students decided in that semester that they should have an activism course that was called an activism course and that would be officially approved, so that no dean could ever walk in like that ever again. So we put together a course proposal, and we submitted it. As a faculty member, I helped in that process. And then it was a battle to get this course approved, this new course, which everyone called the activism course. It ended up being called SCI. That's the science code, because it was in the Faculty of Science, SCI 1101. So, and that course was finally approved after 9 months of pretty intense battles, where the students were occupying committee rooms, they were being heard at every level, and it went through 16 committees. I mean, normally a course like this that is not a prerequisite for anything, that's just a free elective, when the administration wants a course like this, it gets approved within 3 weeks. We know because we've seen it. They once got a course approved because they wanted it in order to neutralize this activism course. They wanted to create another one that someone else would teach, and they got it approved within 3 weeks in the Faculty of Social Science. So we know that that's possible, but this took 9 months and 16 committees because they kept sending it back to committees. So the students fought it all the way up the chain. of command, and eventually won out. Originally, the course was going to be called Psi 1984. The one meant first year, the nine meant bilingual. The students wanted it to be bilingual, and we were told that the other two numbers were more or less arbitrary. So we said, perfect, we'll call it 1984. And it went through about half the committee meetings with that title until someone, one of my enlightened colleagues just decided that that was too much. We couldn't keep calling it that. And in his next memo to the committee or whatever, he replaced the 84 by XX. And eventually they decided that we couldn't actually have bilingual courses at Canada's University. This is what they're calling the University of Ottawa these days. You know, Canada's University, which is supposedly the largest bilingual university in Canada, couldn't actually have bilingual courses. Because what it had to mean, according to the politics of the day, was that you had French courses and English courses on the same campus. So we lost that ability, that option to have a truly bilingual course. And so on. You know, there were compromises along the way, but it was approved in the end, weeks before it started, maybe days before the fall term of 2006, which is the only time it's ever been given. It was an incredible success. The first class, there were over 500 people in the largest auditorium on campus, and the first speaker was Malala Joya, a woman member of parliament from Afghanistan. And this was happening at the same time that the puppet prime minister of Afghanistan was visiting Canada to promote, you know, how wonderful this puppet regime is and so on, and how wonderful the American-Canadian geopolitics in the region is and so on. Well, here was Malala Joya speaking the truth from a grassroots perspective as a women's rights activist in Afghanistan, as a member of parliament who had had her life threatened several times. I mean, it was one of the most moving things I've ever seen in a classroom. It was just exhilarating to feel the intensity and the reality of this, especially on a Canadian campus where Canada was integrating this geopolitical project of the United States. So I mean, it was very, very powerful. The media barely covered it, but it launched the activism course. And it was one of the most spectacular things that I think has ever happened on our campus in terms of a course. And it was so successful that they felt that they had to kill it. And so what they did is they never assigned it to anyone's teaching load ever again. They refused to give it to me. They withdrew me, in fact, from all first-year teaching courses that I had developed and gave me only advanced upper-level physics courses.
And then what was the series of events leading up to your arrest on the U of O campus?
My laboratory was locked down. We were locked out of the laboratory. The graduate students, the researchers were ejected. There was a complete lockdown of the laboratory. And about a week or two following that, I was told that I was being immediately suspended. I was barred from campus. I could only come to see my union representatives, but only accompanied by campus police, etc. And that I would be dismissed as soon as it could be arranged, basically. And that was December 10th, 2008, when I was told those things. Mm-hmm. So I think that there's a long history of my dissent, my criticism, my activism, my novel pedagogy, which the university has never really appreciated, but where you know, there was sort of a tug of war of give and take to try and where I was trying to find my place and where they were adapting to me and so on, and where they were trying all kinds of avenues of possible discipline, which were not successful, and I was grieving when they would do that and so on. So we piled up about 20 grievances and as many disciplinary processes that were all sort of happening in parallel, and we're basically trying to you're pushing and you're finding out the limits, and then all of a sudden, bang, it came down like a heavy hammer under Alan Rock, and all of a sudden I'm barred from campus. Mm-hmm. And in the process of being barred from campus, first I was stunned, and I followed the rules like we academics are indoctrinated to do. And then I spoke to a few lawyers, which pointed out to me that there wasn't really any kind of really strong basis for legally suspending me and barring me from campus if I wasn't fired. So I decided to just challenge it directly and just go onto campus. And for example, they had barred me from my weekly radio show, which I do on campus. They had barred me from my weekly Cinema Politica series, which I've been doing for years. So I decided to go onto campus and do those things. And they arrested me at Cinema Politica in front of, you know, while we were doing the event. They arrested the student, Mark Kelly, who was doing the presentation, and they decided to arrest me as well. Cuffs and taking away in cruisers. It's all on film. You can find these videos on the internet. I think that was a mistake on their part because that became very public. It was talked about in the media and so on. And as a result of that arrest and me challenging it and not obeying despite the arrest and making it clear that I will challenge it in court, they have never arrested me again. And from that point on, I've been able to freely go onto campus. I even delivered a document to the president himself at one point, a legal document, and gave it to him. And he, you know, thanked me in email for the document. You know, there's been no question of the legality of my coming onto campus since that time, really. So, I mean, it shows that you just have to be bold and follow your instinct about what is right in circumstances like that. I think that's what you have to do sometimes. And so I've had free access to campus ever since.
Do you feel that your rights have been taken for granted during this whole disciplinary process?
Oh, it's clear that the institution behaves in such a way, like it oh yeah, I mean, if you were thinking in absolute terms of what is sane, what is just, what makes sense, what is rational, you know, then if the university were thinking in those terms, they wouldn't do any of the things they're doing. The only reason they can get away with this is because they're protected by a facade of legality and legitimacy, you know, because they are the institution, this kind of thing, and also because they have a big communications department, which can spin the events and recast what is happening so that the media, the media basically gobble it up. You know, I mean, the media, if a university says this is what we're doing, this is why we're doing, that has a lot of, it carries a lot of weight in terms of credibility and so on. And so they're able to manipulate the media very, very effectively. And I've seen this many times.
Yeah. Now, what's the future of your career at the university?
My career? Well, I have to say, I don't think in terms of my career. I think in terms, I think more as a responsible citizen who is participating to have an influence in society and make it just a little more sane. I mean, I think it's crazy that Canada is at war in Afghanistan. I think it's crazy that Canada is siding with the U.S. and Israel against human rights resolutions regarding the Palestine-Israel conflict. I think these are all pretty much insane things. The way that CETA acts in the world, the way that you know, it just doesn't make any sense. And the almost total absence of democracy in our society, and the way that our mental environment is managed and transformed by large, corporate and financial influences and so on. And so I'm just trying to see how much influence I can have as an agent to change some of this, to flatten the hierarchical pyramid, make it a little more horizontal and so on. So that's how I see my role in society. So I don't think in terms of my career. I think in terms of a university professor that has huge responsibilities. You know, I have power because of my position, but there are a lot of responsibilities tied to that. And I see myself as an integral part of human rights and civil rights movements and student movements and so on. That's how I see myself. And as an educator, I want to learn and explore and experiment to see what can be done in the classroom. What is education that would liberate as opposed to simply indoctrinate, to simply make obedient drones that accept to be, you know, controlled by the grading and the grades carrot and stick approach and so on, and that buy into this system eventually and accept to play their role in it. So I'm exploring, you know, what can we do with that? How can the human person fight that and create something else, something other than that.
Well, thank you so much for your time.
It's been a great pleasure.